The Solar Panel, a weekly Suns podcast, part of the almighty Baller Podcast Network. We are PHX.
Being a kid of the 1990s, I remember sitting on the couch and watching Seinfeld and watching Friends and all of these wonderful sitcoms. Now, every single time that I turn on the TV, there's Duck Dynasty, there's some reality trucking television. I just don't know what is up with this and what happened to all the actors.
Well, most of them are out of work now. If you go back and look at the cast of Friends, most of them haven't had any success since then. And I think reality television is part of it. And quite frankly, speaking of actors and reality television, have you guys seen any of The Celebrity Apprentice with Arnold Schwarzenegger? I came home last night from the Al McCoy Ring of Honor night, and my wife was watching Celebrity Apprentice, and I swear Arnold Schwarzenegger's face is simply melting. It's ridiculous. He looks like a wax figure of himself that was left outside in Phoenix in the middle of July. It's awful. And then the show is so contrived. Like, I don't understand why we're supposed to believe Arnold Schwarzenegger has any business acumen to try to tell these people how to run these things. And then it's the cheesiest show ever in the fact that his end line is, "You're terminated, get to the chopper." Like, he's basically parodying himself in this entire show. It's so bad. It's ridiculous. And it's even scarier to think about a year and a half ago, our current president was actually hosting that show too. It's reality television, and in particular, The Celebrity Apprentice, is driving me nuts. My only one reality show that I'll actually
wait before you get off Celebrity Apprentice.
Okay, go ahead. Give me your Celebrity Apprentice take, Dave.
So you do realize right now, for better or for worse, you are channeling our current president right now.
I do realize that.
Tweeted an hour ago that Schwarzenegger is being fired for his pathetic, sad ratings.
I don't know anything about
he's
ratings.
The executive producer, though, of the show.
He is still the executive producer,
and so he's like trashing the host while he's the executive producer. I just feel like there's a little bit of irony.
Yeah, because he did trash the host went after the premiere.
Right.
Yeah.
How about the fact that he's the sitting president trashing the host? Who's Arnold Schwarzenegger, who played the Terminator, who was a governor before? None of this makes sense. It actually feels like, a movie.
Current president trashing former governor on shared reality show.
Yeah, it's insanity. I don't know if you guys ever saw the movie Idiocracy by the guy who made Office Space, but I feel like we're living in that. But that's the reality show that drives me nuts, but I can't say all reality TV does. The Bachelor actually is one I'll watch
because it's kind of
like sports, and all I do is scream at the television the entire time. Another show my lovely wife has made me watch. So
the one my wife and I have to sit down and watch just because, and we know it's campy and we know it's awful, but we still watch it, as Survivor. We still 30 seasons in, we're still watching Survivor.
My favorite part about The Bachelor is that you have all these women that hate men for dating multiple women.
Right. And they all feel like you really can find love in a 6-week period on national television with 25 other people vying
actively
for the same
competing advantage with 25 other people.
That's why it's like sports to me. I wish they did the draft process for the number one pick in leagues like this, where you had 25 guys come in with the GM, and then instead of the commissioner announcing the pick, the GM has to give a rose to the guy that they want to draft. And when the Suns have the number one pick next year, I'm actually going to try to pitch this idea to Ryan McDonough.
Well, the chances are it's not going to be the number one pick.
This is true. Right. We'll get to that in the tank rank today.
The Suns are really bad at losing. But you know who's not bad at losing? That is The Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast, which you are listening to right now, part of the almighty Baller Network. Greg Esposito, you can find him on Twitter at Espo, and Dave King at Dave King NBA. I must say, at the end of the last episode, Greg, when you were throwing out my Twitter to the people at Radio Tim NBA, and you were not sure what my Twitter handle was.
Hey, look. When you wind up making me shift from shooting guard to point guard without much warning, you're going to get turnovers. It's just going to happen, all right?
It's Radio 10 NBA. It's not complicated.
Well, see, I think any guy that puts NBA at the end of his Twitter handle is really just trying to make himself look more important. So I just forgot that was part of it.
Wild.
All right. Pretty soon, at Espo NBA. Go right ahead.
It's all about branding. And you can also follow the show here, which is actually the best way to get a hold of us. You can find us on Twitter at Suns Solar Panel. So the one thing that you can do, being somebody listening to this podcast right now that really helps out the podcast more than anything, is by all means leaving us a review on iTunes, a 5-star review and rating. And each week on the show, we are going to read one of the reviews, whether they be good or bad, on the show. We are not going to hold bar on it. So without further ado, the first actual review we've ever gotten on the podcast goes to Viva Las Suns. Viva Las Suns on iTunes says, Arizona sports teams in general, and especially the Phoenix Suns, do not receive much national love on news broadcasts. Being a huge Suns fan, it's great to listen to like-minded fans give their takes and feedback on my favorite sports teams. Keep up the fantastic work, and I look forward to many more episodes. That was Viva Las Suns on iTunes.
Is that loss like what the Suns have been doing all year, or los like the Spanish word? Where are we? I'm glad iTunes hasn't figured out my fake accounts yet, so I can still rate our podcast.
So you know the answer to your question then, Greg?
I do, yes.
We are PHX.
And you are listening to the Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. You can find us on Twitter at Suns Solar Panel. So the big question this week is something that we didn't really get to the last episode quite as much as I think that myself and definitely you guys wanted to. The Suns rotations coming out of the trade deadline, the All-Star break, they are slightly noticeably different.
Yeah, and I, quite frankly, I love them. You're getting rid of the veterans from a majority of your minutes. You're not seeing Tyson Chandler, which I love Tyson Chandler, the guy. I think as a mentor, he's been great for this team. But as a guy who was taking time from the youth, I'm glad he's not playing. Brandon Knight finally is on the bench, which I think we all can agree is a good thing for the growth of this team, which means now we're seeing Alan Williams and Tyler Ulis get major minutes, and they're paying dividends. Alan Williams, we're now seeing, could be a legitimate backup center in this league, which the Suns needed to find out since he's a restricted free agent this offseason. I think you almost have to bring him back with how well he's playing and the double-doubles he's been able to get. He has now 6 on the season, 7 for his career. Impressive from him. Tyler Ulis looked fantastic. The micro machine out there playing great on Friday night and really stuffing the stat sheet in limited minutes. He's a guy that you're seeing grow before your eyes because now he's getting minutes. And with P.J. Tucker leaving, Derek Jones Jr. getting time, and we saw him even mix it up with Russell Westbrook on Friday night, which, you know, we'll talk about it later, but Earl Watson looking for an enforcer. I think Derek Jones Jr. was trying to say, hey, maybe I've got that toughness to do this. There's nothing bad about this new rotation because you're getting to see the young guys get minutes, and it's actually exciting the fan base, which is good too.
Yeah, you know, I wrote a little bit on it on brightsideofthesun.com this morning, plugging my work a little bit here. I talked about Ulis and Alan Williams and Derek Jones Jr. I really like all their attitudes. And what I did not put in the article, because I hadn't transcribed it yet from his post-game comments, but Earl Watson did say that they really are taking on the mentality he's wanted his team to have all year long, which is to be scrappy, not take any crap from anybody. But also not run around starting fights either, but just when somebody tries to push you, you got to stand your ground. And I really like the attitude I see from all of these guys. It's great seeing Alan Williams as kind of Zach Randolph reincarnate in Chuck Hayes's body. I think I think that could be a fun combination for their careers and for his career anyway. And for Tyler Ulis, man, that guy knows how to play. And he – he just gets it done every time he steps on the court. Earl Watson has known all year that Tyler Ulis was ready to play from day one. It's just that because of the point guard rotation with two highly paid point guards on the roster, there just wasn't room for Ulis. And now they just had to force it, and force it they've done. And actually, it's funny. They should be most likely to lose now than they were at any point this year. And yet I feel like they're more likely to win now than they have been all year because of these new guys.
And that kind of comes at a detriment to the team, though, right?
Well, it depends on what you think. I mean, you're talking about Allen Williams is in the second year of his career. Tyler Ulis and Derek Jones are rookies. And you've got three other young guys in your starting rotation that are 23 and under. Actually, four other guys 23 and under in your starting rotation. I think that speaks pretty highly of the future. What you really need, though, is that superstar. And, yeah, the draft is where you're going to have to get it. Luckily, even if the Suns drop to third, fourth, maybe even fifth in the draft, there's still a superstar potential guy out there. There's talk that this draft could have a handful of different all-stars in it. So I'm not too worried about this reverse standings and what percentage points we might lose after every win, or how many percentage points we might gain after every win in the lottery.
Well, yeah, and let's be honest. When you look at the history of the lottery, rarely, if ever, does it play out exactly the way the standings did. I think last year was one of the first times that it actually happened, if I'm remembering that correctly. Like, just because the Lakers may move ahead of you or whoever, the Magic, 76ers, that doesn't mean that that's the way it's going to play out. It's a weighted lottery on purpose. Now, the bigger problem is the Suns haven't had any luck in 48 years, and I'm not sure that the 49th is going to break that streak. That's where the bigger problem is. But you can't hope this team loses every game if they're winning because the youth is actually playing well. That's what you want to see, because it bodes well for the future and the development of these guys. And I'm excited. And you hear people complain all the time about the IT trade. Well, I think they may have found a guy in Tyler Ulis very similar to Isaiah Thomas, outside of the fact that, oh, he plays actual defense, which is a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, let's not go so far as to say maybe Tyler Ulis can outplay IT. IT, we got to give him the credit that he deserves.
I'm not saying right now IT right now, but if you go back and you look at Tyler Ulis year one, IT year one, I mean, there's some similarity. Smaller guy, second round pick, just trying to make things happen. You know, I like it from that standpoint, the effort and the kind of player Tyler Ulis is. And one thing we haven't mentioned is Ulis, Derek Jones Jr., and Allen Williams, all really great guys, too, from everything we can tell, which bodes well for that locker room, too.
So while we're talking about the rotations here, there's obviously been the two most noticeable changes is you're having Tyson Chandler getting the DNPs with Alex Lynn and Allen Williams making up the lion's share of those minutes right there. And it's noticeable, too, over the last couple of games. I think Allen Williams he's been up there, if not passing Alex Lynn as far as the minutes go, and arguably his production has been a lot more solid. But looking at it from, because Dave just brought this up, from a you're winning with youth. You do have a player in Brandon Knight right now who is getting DNPs, and I'm watching the game against Oklahoma City. You guys were there in person. Unfortunately, I'm all the way in Florida, so I have to watch it on League Pass. And Dave, I got to say, my problem with following you on Twitter is, although you are a fantastic follow on Twitter, is that you are about 30 seconds ahead of League Pass. So if you could get your tweets to be about 30 seconds later so you don't ruin everything for people watching the Phoenix Suns on League Pass, that would be really preferable.
I'm terrible at typing, though, and it takes forever. So imagine if I was actually a fast typer, I'd be a minute ahead.
Oh, dude.
Tim, I highly recommend you do what I do and just mute Dave on Twitter. It is a much
That's
better
why I
experience.
Spoke first, Espo.
Well, so the way that we do is, here at the Sun Solar Panels, that we have our tweet deck pulled up, and we have a bunch of really great NBA writers and fans that we follow. And so, I'm sitting there at home, and I like to follow all the Phoenix Suns fans during the game, but they're just giving away all the highlights before they happen. So, it's really disappointing. But But I guess, you know, to my point, Dave, is that you made this comment that, yo, the Suns are winning with youth. And I'm watching the game last night, and you have Leandro Barbosa, who is, you know, there's a team option on him next year. He's owed $4 million this year. He's obviously not a long-term play on the future. You look at a player like Brandon Knight, who, yes, I realize that Brandon Knight has not played well. At the end of the day, though, Brandon Knight is on contract for another 3 years at $15 million. And you are losing, or you are winning games or losing, doesn't really matter in my mind, with a Leandro Barbosa out there closing out games, a Jared Dudley closing out games instead of a Marquise Chris, who, while he was in foul trouble, who cares? He hadn't fouled out of the game. And so I'm not sure that the Suns are actually winning or losing with youth down the stretch in these games. It looks like they're still playing some of those vets. They're just choosing to play different vets.
You want to take that, Greg, or you want me to?
You can take it, since he was referencing your tweets. So you can go first.
All right. I think I've got a couple of different angles on this. First of all, excuse me. First of all, you got to give Earl Watson a little bit of credit. While he has played, he spent most of the year playing Tyson Chandler and Brandon Knight and PJ Tucker big minutes and closing out games with those guys. And now that Tucker's gone and he's completely benched Chandler and Knight, reportedly at the recommendation of management and ownership, because every time bring up why have you totally benched those guys, Earl Watson says they're going to stay benched until management and ownership tells me otherwise. That's just the direction we're going, blah, blah, blah. So if you can't play those three, because one's traded and two are benched, you've got to give them a little bit of credit to play a little bit of veteran savvy on the court. In crunch time, Earl Watson wants to win. He does not want to lose games. And he'll finish with Marquise Chris and Devin Booker, who, by the way, 19, 20 years old, and TJ Warren, as long as he can still have a Dudley or Barbosa or Eric Bledsoe, even, who's the only other over 24-year-old in the entire rotation right now. As long as he can have a couple of those guys on the court, he'll play any youth. It just so happened last night that you've got to give props to Tyler Ulis. You've got to give props to Alan Williams and let them play at the end of the game. But to expect him to put all five really young 23 and under guys out to close out a tight game that he feels like he can win is expecting a little bit too much out of a really competitive coach.
Plus, if he wasn't playing those guys, we probably wouldn't have the best moment of the season so far when Leandro Barbosa earlier this week passed it to Jared Dudley for a wide open three, turned to the crowd and held his hands up like he was going to hit it, and Dudley missed it. So we wouldn't have that moment either if he wasn't playing those guys.
Well, I guess that.
Well, last night it was a pass from, was it from Dudley or was it from Booker to Barbosa to put the Suns up 9 with 56 seconds left? Hitting that fall away three. That was a great moment of last night.
And it was a great moment from 2010 as well.
Yeah.
So so I understand that not all things are going to be in, you know, at the end of the day, we all have bosses, whether or not you are the coach or you are just, you know, in your job, speaking to the listener right now, that we all have bosses and we all have to take instruction from management. I'm just confused as to, the value of playing Leandro Barbosa so many minutes and then completely benching Brandon Knight, what the value is of that to the Phoenix Suns. I mean, Brandon Knight is on contract for $15 million through 2021. Why is he completely benched and giving minutes to a player that might not be here next season? Or if he is, it's probably going to be his last season.
The value is simple. It's attitude. And they like what Leandro Barbosa shows in terms of his love for the game, the way he acts, and the way he handles himself. And they can't say the same for Brandon Knight. And if we're going to sit here and listen to Earl Watson talk about culture and love and building a program and all the things that Earl Watson says, he's got to walk the walk. And he's doing that by playing a guy like Leandro Barbosa, who embodies a lot of the things he's trying to teach.
Taking it to that, because we can't always agree on this podcast, which is something that Dave said last week, was that Earl Watson came out and he said something along the lines of, you know, at the end of the season, this is all about evaluating talent. Are they evaluating Leandro Barbosa's talent?
No, but they've already evaluated Brandon Knight. Yeah, right. Like, they don't need to know anymore. He sucks right now. All right, that talent evaluated. Let's move on. You know.
So how do you get his trade value up then? If you don't play him at all,
you don't. That's the problem. His trade value is gone, and I don't think forcing him minutes now and trying to showcase him is going to change any of that. This is a guy that once the Suns deal him, will have been traded from four teams in 5 years. Like, at some point, GMs aren't idiots. They realize what's going on. What's going to happen is the Suns are probably going to have to trade him with some kind of sweetener, probably some second-round picks for a second-round pick, and just decide it's time to move on or take somebody else's malcontent and hope that a change of scenery fixes that guy. That's where we are. That's the reality with Brandon Knight, and there's no magical formula to change that at this point.
Yeah, he's had the year he's going to have, and anything he does after this point – would just be, yeah, but he's doing it in a losing situation that doesn't matter. He had his opportunity. He had more than enough opportunity this year to play himself out of his funk. And Watson supported him the whole time. And at some point, Watson just said, look, you know what? I'm done supporting this right now.
So you guys are obviously a lot closer to the team than I am.
Physically, Brandon, yeah, you're in Florida.
Right. You know, you guys are also there. You're in the locker room and you're talking to the players one on one and that kind of thing. And looking at Brandon Knight from afar is that I haven't seen an attitude problem from him from afar.
He's a good guy. Everyone likes him. He's very well liked. Eric Bledsoe just did a radio interview last week on the local radio show that basically, he said he's been in Knight's ear all year. Just keep your head up. Don't worry about it. You know, try to get out of your head and start playing as well as you can. And so the guys all really like each other, and everyone likes Brandon Knight. He's not that kind of attitude problem. He's not a malcontent.
No.
His attitude problem is that he doesn't have a free spirit right now when he's on the court. Everything is in his head when he's on the court, and he can't get out of his own head. And because of that, he's a detriment to the team. He's not producing the way as a teammate, as a guy who's, I mean, he's not jumping up and down on the bench when somebody scores, because who knows what he's thinking about, but it's he's not engaged in the moment. And Watson wants people that are there in the moment.
I've always felt like he may be one of those guys that is too intelligent for the game, which sounds ridiculous, but he was a valedictorian in high school. He's a super smart guy, and sometimes when you get guys like that, they are way too much in their head because they're overanalyzing every little thing, and basketball is instinctual. I mean, you look at it, and you're making decisions and calls on things in a split second. It's not – you're not sitting there – weighing the pros and cons of what a pass is going to be, or should I go between a guy's legs, or whatever the case may be. And I think sometimes Brandon Knight just gets too caught up in his own head, to Dave's point.
So it seems like part of the value of having Leandro Barbosa there is that Leandro Barbosa plays a little bit better off ball than Brandon Knight does. And so when you have him out there with like a Tyler Ulis, is that you can still allow Tyler Ulis to run the team, run the ship, you know, be the quarterback, if you will, out there a little bit easier than Leandro Barbosa. Does it seem like Brandon Knight doesn't have a mentality in which he would allow that kind of role while he's out there on the floor?
Well, I think he's willing to try to do anything. I just don't think he's suited for it, quite frankly.
He's not suited for it. When he's playing off the ball, he's like any point guard who's asked to play off the ball, including Eric Bledsoe, by the way, last night too, played a little bit off the ball for a few minutes with Tyler Ulis as the point. A point guard, when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, he stands around. He stands in the corner. He kind of floats along the perimeter waiting to get the ball so he can restart the play on the weak side away from the guy who's trying to start the play right now if it doesn't work. And they, you know, that's called, you know, being, making yourself available. But what Barbosa does is he's constantly moving and cutting. And Ulis and Barbosa actually had a nice pick and roll finish last night because Barbosa just automatically just cut to the basket and Ulis found him. Neither Brandon Knight nor Eric Bledsoe have that mentality to do when they don't have the ball in their hands. So yes, Barbosa is much more suited to play off the ball.
Watching Barbosa play is that I have seen him score at least 100 times this season alone, where he takes the drive off the baseline and then he hits the ball off glass and banks it in. You guys, you're there in person and you're watching teams fall for this. And how do teams not recognize that's what Barbosa is going to do 80% of the time when he gets the ball on the baseline?
I don't know. He's been doing it his whole career. What shocked me is he's now 14th in scoring in Suns history. That happened last night. I think he surpassed Connie Hawkins, if I'm correct. And that's nuts to me. This guy, you wouldn't think Leandro Barbosa, one of the top 15 scorers in Suns history, it's almost as surprising as the way he scores on the court.
The fourth winningest franchise in NBA history with 49 years of history. Yeah, Leandro Barbosa being number 14, that's pretty hot.
There's a Suns official Twitter. Every single NBA team has an official Twitter, and they usually name it PR. I just found out last night that the Suns call it something else, which is like Suns stats or whatever the case might be. But they put up a stat about Leandro Barbosa. It was like his 1,000th, maybe no, his 600th Phoenix Suns game last night. Was that it?
You're better than I am, but that Cole Michelson runs that Twitter account, and that guy's a czar with the with the statistical knowledge. You'll find some great nuggets on that account. I can't highly recommend that more. If you're not following it out there, listeners, do it because you'll be a much smarter Suns fan by the end of it.
Yeah, actually, that one is Suns BBall.com, and that's run by Cole Michelson, as Greg says, and then the more social Twitter where they put up all the GIFs and the plays that just happened is on just at Suns.
I don't know anything about that one.
Yeah. It's been so much better in the past year.
It has. It's almost like they relieved themselves of some giant burden that they had for the previous 5 years. I don't know what it was.
Okay, so I just pulled it up right now at SunsBBall.com, and Leandro Barbosa against OKC made his 544th appearance with the Phoenix Suns, passing Mark West for 9th on the team's all-time games played leaderboard. As far as scoring, right there, Suns players. And that Leandro Barbosa also now has 6,369 points. He passed Phoenix Suns Ring of Honor member Connie Hawkins for the 14th on the team's all-time leading scoreboard. So, Espo, you were right, 6,369. That was the magic number to do it.
I do have a decent memory despite what my wife says.
We are PHX.
So we interrupt this great podcast that you're listening to. My name is Kevin Rafuse.
I'm Tim Tompkins.
And I'm Justin Cousart.
And we host the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
We cover every team in the league and a bunch of really fun segments like Random NBA Player, Drive and Dougal, and Hot Takes from Reddit.
So when you're done listening to this podcast, give us a search on iTunes or whatever podcast streaming app you're listening on.
We're also at driveanddishpodcast.com. We are the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
So one of the things that Earl Watson said this last week, which I think was a little bit particular, they said it in public, and I'll kind of get your guys' takes on it, was that the Phoenix Suns need an enforcer to protect their top talent. He was obviously referring to Devin Booker, who just seems like all these teams are just trying to throw elbows at him. And the latest one was Vince Carter in a very un-Vince Carter-like move, some people calling a flop. I don't necessarily agree that it was a flop on Booker's part, but to that extent, I thought it was a little bit particular that Earl Watson made these comments in public because, a lot of teams they're going to have those conversations internally, go out and address that in free agency. I personally want to get your guys' take on this as him speaking to the other players on the Phoenix Suns roster, hoping that they would hear that comment.
Not exactly. Actually, Greg was there with me last night when we were there for the coach's pregame. And he was asked about that, so he elaborated a lot more than what he had earlier in the week publicly. He basically said that he really is looking for someone to be that tough guy, like Meta World Peace, Ron Artest, like Matt Barnes. He talked about Matt Barnes several times. You need a guy, and it's funny because somebody said, could Marquise Chris be that guy someday because Chris has a chip on his shoulder? And Watson said, no, you can't have one of your best players be your enforcer because then that guy's the one who gets teased or gets fouled out. You need someone who is not one of your best players being your enforcer on the court. And so, no, he was still actively saying, look, And he admitted after the game last night, after Derrick Jones Jr. got into a scuffle with Russell Westbrook with a couple of elbows as well being thrown at another yet another young Suns player. He's like, Watson's like, man, I wish I could be out there and hit back, but I can't. And so I need somebody who can hit back for me, and that can't be one of my best players. So they are going to – he is going to want, whether he gets it or not, obviously he doesn't think he runs the show. He knows when Ryan McDonough or Robert Sarver say something's got to happen, he's going to make it happen, and he's going to work with it. But he would love to have a tough guy on the team, and he I don't think he thinks that tough guy is on the roster right now.
Well, stick with me on this, but when you've broken up with somebody in the past and you get about a week away from that breakup, there's usually that moment where you kind of miss that person, whether you were the one that broke up with them or they broke up with you. You have this, oh, did I kind of screw up in walking away from this person? I think that's what Earl Watson's going through in terms of PJ Tucker right now, because PJ Tucker was that enforcer. He was that tough guy. He was the guy that if somebody got in Devin Booker's grill or did what Vince Carter did, PJ Tucker was going to have a problem with Vince Carter in that game. PJ Tucker was going to take care of that. Now Earl Watson doesn't have that, and he's missing it. I think that's kind of part of what's going on right now.
So taking a look at the unrestricted free agents going into this summer, I pegged a couple of names. I thought to myself, you know what, these players could be an enforcer. So I'm going to toss these names out to you guys, and I want to kind of get your opinions if you think the Suns might go after any of these players to be the quote-unquote enforcer for Devin Booker and T.J. Warren and those guys. Unrestricted free agents going into the summer, Tony Allen, James Johnson, Aaron Baines, Nene, Thomas Robinson, and Zaza Pachulia.
See, I don't think any of these guys fit into the long-term plan right now. I don't think you get an enforcer until you're good enough to have an enforcer. I think when you're in the playoffs, a potential contender, once Devin Booker matures a little bit more, then you get you spend the money on an enforcer. If Earl Watson really wants a guy that's willing to just go out there and punch a guy or get some technicals, I'm available for the veteran minimum. You can throw me out there, and I'm happy to mix it up with anybody. But I don't think you go out there and you particularly chase a free agent with that mindset until you're ready for it. And I don't think this Suns team is at that position yet.
Yeah, I'm really glad you didn't actually list Matt Barnes among the group, because he'll be a free agent this summer too. But I'm not sure Robert Sarver would allow that signing to happen.
I never understood that rivalry with them, by the way. I don't quite
yeah,
get it. They're always jawing at each other. Still not sure why.
Well, as a Phoenix Suns fan, I can say that I don't mind not having Matt Barnes on the roster, though I really do love what James Johnson does. So, I would always be a fan of the Phoenix Suns picking up James Johnson if there's ever an availability to do so.
We are PHX.
You are listening to the Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Greg Esposito, Dave King, my name is Tim Tompkins. You can follow us on Twitter at Suns Solar Panel. The MVP of the week, I'll start this off. My MVP of the week definitely goes to T.J. Warren, who we all know he hasn't been right since that mysterious head injury. But over the last five games, he's averaging 17 points on 67% shooting, 7 rebounds a game in 33 minutes a contest. And he is a plus in the box plus minus on 3 of the last 5 games. And compared to the 5 games previous to that, where he was averaging 9 points a game, 48% shooting in 25 minutes, 4 rebounds a game. And I do got to say that he was the Phoenix Suns' leading scorer against the Bucks. 23 points, where he had an effective field goal percentage of 82% and an offensive rating of 148 compared to a defensive rating of 109. My MVP going to T.J. Warren.
My MVP of the week is going to be actually Tyler Ulis. I think that guy has taken his opportunity and just run with it. I know we talked about this last week, and we kind of fought over whether it was Tyler Ulis or not. This guy is just so fun and special to watch. I love how he pesters. I love how he goes full court pressure. He was going at it with Norris Cole last night. Actually, Norris Cole was trying to go at it with him and failing badly, and it was just a real, real bad game for Norris Cole. And Tyler Ulis just kept going back and forth at him offensively, defensively, and really showed him up. So that's got to be my favorite of the week. Is definitely got to be Tyler Ulis. But I totally hear what you're saying, Tim. I was really, really impressed with T.J. Warren's willingness to fight for rebounds in the paint in traffic. He had not shown that much in prior in his career, and just over the past week, maybe that's because P.J. Tucker's gone and he feels like he has to fill that void. But I've been very impressed with his rebounding as well as the rest of his play.
Look, I respect both of you guys. Well, all right, I respect you, Tim, but you're both wrong. you're both wrong on this. The MVP of the week simply is the Suns fans. On Friday night, and last week I was pretty harsh on Suns fans, both on this podcast and on a special piece I wrote for Brightside. The fans stepped up. They gave Al McCoy the honor that he deserved. They gave him the ovation he deserved. And they made it a truly special moment last night. I wrote about it on Sports 360 AZ on the Purple Rain blog there. They really stepped up and showed Al McCoy the love that this man, who's given his heart and soul to this city, to this organization, they showed him the love and respect he deserved last night. And it actually made me truly proud to be a Phoenix Suns fan. So they're my MVP this week because I wasn't sure it was going to happen. But they restored my faith in Phoenix Suns fans last night.
So I was really hoping that I was going to be able to come up with some line, something along the lines of, we're a democracy and we're going to go with the best two of the three. And I was actually fairly certain that both of you were going to choose Tyler Ulis. And so I kind of intentionally went with T.J. Warren for that. Also, I have a lot of love for T.J. Warren. I'm so happy to get him back on track. But it sounds like on this episode that we aren't going to be able to go with the democratic approach and just choose who two out of the three of us chose.
Hold on. Are you telling me that you guys hate Phoenix Suns fans? Because that's what I'm hearing. If you're not voting for what I said, I hear you're saying you hate Suns fans. That's just what I'm hearing.
How about we all capitulate and say the MVP of the week is Al McCoy?
Done. Fair. I agree.
So I was on NBA Twitter last night, and I was looking at pictures of the game, and I knew how much this meant to you guys and how much it meant to Suns fans. And I saw this one picture of Al McCoy and Charles Barkley and a couple of other fellows, and whew, there is a height differential that I was not aware of.
Al is a tiny man.
Al's a tiny man.
Very tiny man. I'm not exactly a giant at 5'9", and I feel quite large in stature next to Al, but there's not a nicer man, not a harder working guy out there. But yes, there is a huge height differential between what the guys Al covers and himself. And there's a great photo from back in the mid 90s of Al standing on a chair interviewing Tom Chambers, and Tom Chambers is still a good 7 inches taller than him, even with Al standing on a chair.
Yeah, we've got the actual media room area is called the Al McCoy Media Room, and so all the walls are covered with murals of Al's career. And when he was in high school, there's a picture of him in high school as a basketball player with his short shorts and everything back in, I don't know if this was the 1800s or something. Sorry, Al, but he's standing between two normal-sized guys on his basketball team, and he can't even reach the ball that they're all holding between them over their heads.
That's because there were all of 11 kids in the small town of Iowa that he grew up in, so he had to play for them to field a full team.
I mean, he just had such a big booming voice that I wouldn't have expected that from him, finally seeing him in person compared to some of the people that he covers.
We are PHX.
And you are listening to The Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Dave King, Greg Esposito, my name is Tim Tompkins. You can find us on Facebook at Suns Solar Panel. Keeping up on the tank rank right now, the Phoenix Suns are sitting at 20-42 for the number 3 spot as worst in the NBA right now. The Los Angeles Lakers, no reason to refer to them as the Los Angeles Lakers. We all know who I'm talking about. 19-43, Brooklyn with a 10-50 record. record. The Orlando Magic with a 23-39 record. It looks like the Suns have a 46.9% chance of getting a top three overall pick. The Lakers with a 56% chance, and obviously Brooklyn, a.k.a. Boston, with a 64% chance. The Suns coming into this week right here with losses against the Bulls, the Bucks, and the Memphis. Wins against Charlotte and OKC. Your guys' thoughts?
Hey, look, I'm actually going to take a different stance than I think most Suns fans will, but I actually think it's a good thing that the Lakers are going to wind up with a top three pick, because I can't take an entire summer of Suns fans bitching and moaning about that draft pick that was sent to Philadelphia in part of the Brandon Knight swap, winding up going to Philadelphia, and everybody saying, well, the Suns could have had the number blah, blah, blah pick and the number blah, blah, blah pick if they hadn't made the Brandon Knight trade. I literally cannot stand listening to that. So I won't be heartbroken if the Lakers finish with a top three pick.
Yeah, if the Lakers don't finish with a top three pick after the lottery, then they're the biggest losers in the NBA because they have such a bad team. But they were unlucky enough to have a great month of November when they went, I think, 10-11 to start the year, and now they're perpetually screwed because of that. So yeah, they are desperately trying to get that number two slot. I'm not going to be surprised when they end up holding on to that thing and at least getting a 10% better chance of keeping that top three pick this year. And like Greg, I would hate having to spend the entire summer listening to Suns fans saying, we could have had this guy and that guy. And especially as we're trying to trade Brandon Knight for a swap of second round picks in 2022. So I think it could be a real ugly summer on that end. The saving grace being that the Suns are still going to be in that 3-4-5 slot. Possibly even getting up to the 1 or 2, because they really only lose a 10% chance with every slot they drop of getting in the top three, and they'll have Tyler Ulis as their backup point guard instead of Brandon Knight. So there are saving graces, yes, it would be a really hard summer if the Lakers end up outside that top three for us.
Well, and if you're the Lakers too, and you are getting the number two overall draft pick, we've all talked about how point guard heavy that this draft is, whether you're talking about Lonzo Bell, Markelle Fultz, Dennis Smith. But if you're looking at the Lakers, they already have a D'Angelo Russell, Jordan Clarkson. There might be a chance that they do draft a Josh Jackson instead of a point guard, which means that you've regardless.
But then they just took Brandon Ingram.
If you're the Lakers, you're sort of stuck between a rock and a hard spot on this draft right here. From the Phoenix Suns perspective, you know, do the Phoenix Suns draft a point guard since they already have four?
Well, look, what is going to happen with if it's the Lakers or the Suns, whoever, there's going to be a trade at the top of this draft. And if it's the Lakers, it's likely some kind of Paul George deal surrounding that pick, I imagine. If it's the Suns, it could be where you see a guy like an Eric Bledsoe being dealt because they believe in the point guard that they're going to be able to take. There will be some kind of draft or some kind of trade based off of the top of this draft.
Yeah, you can't even not talk about the Celtics getting that top pick. They'll be in the top three, and they've already got Isaiah Thomas, who will not be happy having a Markelle Fultz or Lonzo Ball coming in this summer, knowing that he's likely to lose a lot of playing time or be asked to play the number two, the shooting guard position. But they also have Avery Bradley, they have Marcus Smart, they have Terry Rozier. So I don't know that the Celtics really want that top pick. Even at small forward, they've got Jaylen Brown already, who in the past 10 games is averaging 17-7. So I don't even know if the Celtics really want that top three pick. What they want to do is get themselves a superstar and trade out. So I think Danny Ainge might eventually pull that trigger and make that trade and give that pick to somebody else. And it's possible he might even just trade down a little bit. So the Suns still may be able to finagle their way into a top pick if they really want it. But I'd be perfectly okay with the Suns taking a Josh Jackson or a Jonathan Isaac in the draft as a small forward. Even though Derek Jones is showing some promise and TJ Warren showing some promise, it helps to have a superstar on your team. And those guys could be. I really think they could be. And I really think Eric Bledsoe could be a playoff point guard. So you don't absolutely have to replace him.
Well, yeah, I think it's all about leverage right now for these teams too. If you get another young piece in there. You now have the ability to move, say, a TJ Warren if somebody's available that you want to add to this mix. And especially in the Sun situation, it's just about getting the best players available and then trying to figure out how do we shift the roster in accordance to make it work on the court.
I guess whatever you do, if you're the Phoenix Suns, you don't draft a power forward. I would say from the Celtics' perspective is that they have a really interesting year coming up, whether or not they extend Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas, I think he's, 30 years old right now. If you go ahead and you give him that $200 million extension, $175 million extension, if that kind of caps your franchise. So I wouldn't be too particularly surprised to see the Celtics going for a point guard there. But, I mean, to your guys' point, talking about Eric Bledsoe, one of the things that's been surprising to me watching this right here is thinking Eric Bledsoe is probably he is our most valuable player in terms of a trade. So if you're the Phoenix Suns, you go ahead and you severely cut down on the minutes of Eric Bledsoe for the remainder of the season. That way you make it less likely he's has a chance to get injured. You go ahead and you keep Brandon Knight on the roster because you aren't going to be able to get rid of him. You draft a point guard. That gives your point guard 2 or 3 years until Brandon Knight's contract is done to really develop his skills. And then you go ahead and you trade Eric Bledsoe over the offseason to try and get something back of value, no?
No, did you just suggest did you suggest we have Brandon Knight be the starting point guard to the rest of his contract? Please don't make that happen. I'd rather have Tyler Ulis take over if you're going to trade Eric Bledsoe.
I'd rather Robert Sarver stand in the middle of the court at Talking Stick Resort Arena, put $15 million at center court, and do what the Joker did in The Dark Knight Rises and just light that pile of cash on fire than ever start Brandon Knight again as a Phoenix Sun, all right? If you're going to waste $15 million, just let Brandon Knight waste it sitting on the bench, all right?
I'm talking about some long-term viability. Look, at the end of the day, you cannot compete with the Warriors right now, and that is essentially what the Phoenix Suns are up against right now. They're waiting out the window of the Golden State Warriors, whether or not you believe that or buy into it, but you're looking at Kevin Durant going into his prime, Klay Thompson going into his prime, Steph Curry, it looks like they're going to be able to keep that core on their roster cap-wise. Now they aren't going to have any pieces around them, but they're all going to be there for a while, so realistically the Suns aren't competing anyway. I mean, if it were me, that's the play I would make, but then again, I'm really happy that I am not sitting in a GM role, because that is a really tough one to be in.
Well, look, and I'm unabashedly the card-carrying member of the Eric Bledsoe fan club. I love the guy. I love the way he plays, and I think legitimately he's going to be a borderline all-star for the next 2 or 3 seasons. I'd hate to see the Suns bail on him before he fully reaches that potential, but I also understand the standpoint that he's their most valuable trade chip as well. It would just pain me to see him leave, especially if that meant we're starting Brandon Knight for the next 2 years.
Well, you're bringing along the point guard you develop. So the theory behind it is what I thought they were going to do with the Tyson Chandler and Alex Len is you're starting Tyson Chandler for now, but over the course of the next couple of seasons, Len begins to really take that role and eat up some of those minutes, and then Tyson Chandler's role kind of dissipates from there. That's not really something we saw until after the trade deadline, but that's the theory behind the statement. It's not a all-in, let's go ahead and start Brandon Knight for the next 3 years and just screw whatever point guard that the Phoenix Suns draft. There is a process behind it, and you all know that we must trust the process.
Tim, I'm going to just let you keep shoveling and digging yourself a bigger hole here. There's no way you can justify the idea to me of ever starting Brandon Knight again. I'm a bigger believer in, if you're going to have a great kid that you think could be a superstar, throw him in the pool, let him learn how to swim. It's worked with Marquise. It's worked with Devin Booker. Let's just, if you believe in him, if you think he's a smart enough and a tough enough guy to be your point guard and superstar of the future, play him. Don't give me a guy that isn't impressive.
Man, I'm going to go down as being like, I feel bad for Brandon Knight. I understand. I believe that Brandon Knight can be a good player. I believe that he's been put into a bad situation. I believe that he hasn't been developed properly. I believe that the Suns have found a way to knock his confidence, and you know, whether or not he can get it back, that doesn't really matter. What matters to me in my mind is that Brandon Knight is a good player. He's 24 years old. He's under contract for the next 3 years for $15 million, and that the Phoenix Suns have you can't have a $15 million dead money contract. You know, the Knicks have that, and that's really going to hurt them. The Lakers have that with Mozgov and Deng. It's not a viable situation. So if you're the Phoenix Suns, you have to turn around that trade value. You have to play him. Otherwise, in order to get him off the books, you're going to end up having to trade not a number one pick, but a first-round draft pick just to get a Brandon Knight off your books. I'm not sure that that's the best avenue to take, especially if you're going to be drafting a point guard anyway.
Have you gone to the Earl Watson School of Motivation? Because you're blowing some pretty impressive smoke right now. If Brandon Knight were truly a great player in this league, he wouldn't have been traded from Detroit, Milwaukee, and now the Suns trying to get rid of him. There's something inherently an issue that is causing this guy to not be a long-term part of teams' futures. And I love the fact that you want to try to turn around the trade value, that you seem to have faith in this guy, but I just can't get on the boat. Brandon Knight is a very nice guy, and this is not a personal thing. I liked my time around him working with the team, but on the court, he's just not a guy that's going to get it done. And I don't care how much love and compassion and whatever you want to show him, it ain't going to work. So don't waste the time.
We are PHX.
And you are listening to the Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Greg Esposito at Espo on Twitter, Dave King at Dave King NBA on Twitter. My name's Tim Tompkins. You can follow me at Radio Tim NBA. And you can get at the show anytime on Twitter at Suns Solar Panel. So what we're doing the last segment of the show is we are doing a Reddit and Twitter mailbag. We're going to start this off over on the Reddit side. At SunDevil13 asks, is Eric Bledsoe part of our plan, referring to the Phoenix Suns, moving into the future?
I really hope so. I'm going to be posting something in the next few days talking about Bledsoe's progression. I think in the last couple of months, he's shown a really, really good progression in the point guard skills and playmaking and leading the team. The Suns, since January 1st, are one of the top half offenses in the league. Since February 1st, they're even better. So it's a good progression for Bledsoe. He's never going to be Steve Nash, but you know what? He's got a lot of skills that Steve Nash didn't have. So I love watching Bledsoe keep his head up now when he drives to the rim. I love how he sets up teammates and having Tyler Ulis as his backup, I think is a nice little combination going forward. So plus he's under contract for two more seasons. And he only makes $14 million a year. Some of these point guards this summer are going to be worse than Bledsoe, and they're going to get bigger contracts.
Yeah, and I'll take it from a different angle, too. His progression off the court has been amazing since he came to Phoenix. He was a totally timid guy when he got here. Didn't talk a lot. Didn't seem like he embraced the idea of any kind of leadership role. Now he's kind of changed that. He's very talkative. He's kind of embraced trying to learn how to be a leader. He's talked about how he has a life coach and that he's reading different books that Earl Watson suggested. Those are the kind of things that I like to reward a guy who's been working on his craft both on and off the court. And that's a guy you want part of the future. I would like to see him stay around. You'd maybe potentially draft the next great Suns point guard, if that's where you're at, but have him be along for that ride too, and grow into what, as I mentioned earlier, I think is an all-star potential guard. I think he's part of this future.
Ross McLeod on Twitter, he asks, with Ulis getting more minutes, and we're kind of beating a dead horse with this one, regardless, so we're going to ask the question anyway. With Ulis getting more minutes, how can Knight's trade value be increased to anything resembling more than a 14-day-old pizza?
Yeah, I think really at this point, the only way Brandon Knight's trade value is going to increase is the old adage, absence makes the heart grow fonder. The longer it's been since somebody saw Brandon Knight play regular minutes on the court, maybe the better it is. That's why more trades happen in the summer than do at the trade deadline, for example. I mean, GMs are human beings too. I know we don't like to think about this, but Markieff Morris had two really good weeks of play a year ago, and he suddenly was available for a lottery pick. Brandon Knight had two really bad weeks of play right before the trade deadline, and you couldn't hand him away for a bag of chips. So I think while we don't want GMs to be victims of recency bias, they are. And so, you know, that's why summer trades happen, or summer trades are more common than trade deadline trades, because it's been months since they saw these guys actually on the court, and so they can talk themselves into how they fit on a new team and what were the circumstances. And Tim, some of those guys will even have the same reasons you did for why Knight has not succeeded in Phoenix. So really, I think the only thing the Suns can do at this point is just hope that some GM talks himself into it.
So yeah, I've put a lot of thought into this, and I have a distinct strategy on how we can up Brandon Knight's trade value. It requires a bunch of fake news articles in select cities that GMs may see, highlighting all the great plays and great stat lines that Brandon Knight has had over his career. And we really push him that way to try to con one of these GMs into thinking that he's some kind of quality player. And I'm willing to put my own money into this, and also look at starting a Kickstarter to fund some of this as well, because I think it's a strategy that'll win and fool some kind of GM, even say like a Magic Johnson who's new on the job, that maybe we can just convince that that Brandon Knight is the kind of guy they need in L.A.
Well, the Kings will be looking for a point guard. Looking at yeah. Darren Collison on the out there. Going to our
Actually, there's another strategy. We send Vladdy 16 crates of cigarettes with Brandon Knight. I bet we can get something good.
Speaking to the last question we got on Phoenix Suns Reddit, this was Per Hizzle is the name of their Reddit name, Per Hizzle. It's very creative. I'd like to end the show on a fun note. If Diet Dr. Pepper tastes as good as regular Dr. Pepper, like they say in the commercials, why do they even make regular Dr. Pepper?
Yeah. This is the original fake news. So we used to be limited on fake news to people making fake Twitter accounts during trade deadline and free agency for sports. And then TV commercials have always been about new and improved and blah, 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 and all this. And yes, tastes just as good as regular Dr. Pepper. So why the heck would you keep selling regular Dr. Pepper? That's a great question. We're just starting to see fake news more mainstream these days, thanks to a certain individual.
My guess is because regular Dr. Pepper is less likely to kill you than Diet Dr. Pepper, based on the kind of chemicals that they're putting in Diet Dr. Pepper. So they don't want to kill off their entire customer base. Thus, they don't make the switch.
All valid points, gentlemen. As always, honors and scholars, and thank you so much for being here. This is the fourth episode, but I guess really the second episode. We would say that we didn't name the Sun the episode after a Suns player this time around, but the player we got for episode number four, giving a shout out there. And we're going to find a really an interesting way to incorporate this into the episodes. The fan vote went to Michael Finley, who won with 43% of the vote. So shout out to Finley. Espo, by the way, have you figured out how we are going to incorporate the Phoenix Suns player for the episode number quite yet?
No, I have not, because with the 14 jobs I'm working, that was not one of the things I had time to solve this week. I was working on peace in the Middle East, the Brandon Knight trade solution, and a few other things, so I didn't get to it yet.
If you guys have any ideas, you're listening to this podcast right now, hit us up on Twitter at SunSolarPanel. Let us know how we can incorporate the name of a Phoenix Suns player fan vote into the show somehow. And again, you are listening to the Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Greg Esposito, you can follow him on Twitter at Espo. Dave King of Bright Side of the Sun, you can follow him on Twitter at Dave King NBA. My name is Tim Tompkins at Radio Tim NBA on Twitter. Of course, you can follow the Solar Panel on Twitter at Sun Solar Panel. We are also on Facebook. And shout out one last time to Viva Los Suns for leaving us a review on iTunes. There's single-handedly nothing more that you can do to really help out this podcast and leave us a review and a rating and tell a friend on iTunes. It really is a big help. Gentlemen, until next week.
The Solar Panel, a weekly Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. We are PHX.